This is a production of Cornell University.
Welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Clippings Podcast. My name is Carl Scamenti, and I'm an extension aide here at the Cornell University Turfgrass Program. Today's episode, we're going to focus on the idea of clipping volume, how it works, and how it might be useful information for a turfgrass manager to collect. To put it simply, this concept is the same as yield for an agricultural crop, right? Just as you'd measure the amount of corn harvested off of a field, we measure the amount of grass removed during mowing. Historically, in our industry, this hasn't been a traditional metric tracked on golf courses, and that kind of makes sense, right? We always have been interested in the quality of the grass and its performance characteristics, but not how much it grows, so why would it make sense to measure that growth? Well, in the last couple years, there's been investigation of this concept of clipping volume, both by researchers and turf managers, and some have found it very useful in producing high-quality putting surfaces. So, we at the Cornell Turfgrass Program decided that in 2018, we'd attempt to investigate this for ourselves, the value of tracking clipping volume in a real-life scenario. Fortunately for us, we found a willing partner right next door at the Cornell University Robert Trent Jones Golf Course. So today's episode is going to feature our conversation with the superintendent of that golf course, David Hicks, who tracked clipping volume for the entire year in 2018. We're going to discuss the positives and negatives of this experiment, the insight he gained from it, and whether he'll do it again in 2019. With much of our industry discussing clipping volume openly on social media, we felt that Dave would provide a balanced perspective on the topic, as he's an inherent skeptic. So let's get right into the conversation, starting with some background on Dave's career in the turfgrass industry.
I've been here 21 years. Initially got in the turf industry. Every job I ever had was on a golf course. I'm a golfer of sorts, I guess. And so it was just my love of golf that got me into the business. Went to Texas A&M, and from there I was assistant superintendent in New Orleans at English Turn, a Jack Nicklaus course, and then became superintendent there for 7 years. From there, moved up here. Been up here 21 years.
So as you heard, Dave has a lot of experience in the turfgrass industry. He's been both in the southern and northern U.S., managing grass for an extended period of time. So with all that experience, I asked him, how did clipping volume used to factor into your management program? Did you used to look at that on a daily basis? How would you gauge the amount of grass coming off of your greens? And how did that factor into your management of the surfaces?
Very little, I would say, in hindsight. It was, you know, probably not too different from a lot of people. I would talk to my guy mowing greens, and that would be usually a daily conversation. You know, how many times did you dump today? How many greens did you go before dumping?
Yep.
And then occasionally that would inform me when we were in a low growth period where I would see, wow, we hardly got any, so maybe we'll skip mowing the next day. But, you know, it was still a very informal thing.
All right. So you got a little bit of value out of it.
Yes.
So it appears Dave's like a lot of other turfgrass managers who do monitor the amount of clippings that come off their greens, kind of by this gauging how many times the operator has dumped during the day. And that's not a very refined way to do it, but he did say there is some value based on that. But, you know, in talking with him during the winter of 2017, he felt like if we could come up with a more accurate way of measuring the clippings, he might be able to get more value out of that measurement. And we looked at some of the work Micah Woods and Bill Kreuzer have been doing with this clipping volume measurement, and we decided to set it up in 2018 at the Cornell Golf Course. Now, keep in mind, Dave had a lot of skepticism at the beginning, and he had a lot of the same reservations that many people express online about clipping volume, so the first thing we did was talk about those initial reservations.
I was somewhat skeptical. You know, the biggest thing, you know, with most of us, most golf course superintendents, we don't feel like we have enough time to do everything we need to do. So if something's going to add time, we need to feel like we get value out of it. So A, gosh, isn't it going to take some time? And then B, what's it really going to give us? Is it You know, my first skeptical was, well, sometimes the greens are wet, sometimes they're dry. Yeah. Yeah. And I really felt like that was enough to just throw away the idea of doing it. Mm-hmm. And you know, talking to you and some of the research that's been done, you know, I realized, well, maybe, you know, there is some value there. So,
So with these initial reservations in mind, let's get into how Dave actually measured clipping volume. What were the logistics behind it? How long did it take the operator to measure clippings? How many greens did he measure, and why did we choose those greens?
We talked maybe initially about three greens, and then when we were trying to make sure that this first year doing it was not burdensome.
Right, right.
You know, so we said, yeah, you know, where could we put it? And what we came up with is doing two greens, because at our course, and every course is different, and some have, you know, eight different types of greens.
Yep,
right?
Yep.
We typically have the shadiest greens are mostly poa, and they grow differently than what the greens that are out in the open grow.
Yep.
So it's those main two types. There's variations of that, but you know, so we made sure we want to get one green that's one of our weaker shady greens, and one that's right out in the open. And it so happened the fifth green and the seventh green are very close to each other, and we mow them consecutively.
Mm-hmm.
So what we decided, that, and it's right near the pump house, was go to this one spot. So after the fifth green is mowed, go to this one spot, dump, collect, make notes. Then the seventh green is right there. Drive over to that, get your clippings, come back, and go from there. And obviously, it took some time.
Yep.
It's not that it took no time, but it would be even hard for me to put a number on it that it was, to me, pretty insignificant.
Yeah. You know? And in terms of, you know, I think when we'll talk about what you got out of the information, it ends up being worth it, right? For, you know, that minute a day or minute and a half a day.
I think so.
You think it's worth it?
You know, just still trying to refine the information, see what other numbers other people are getting and where it might head. But my feeling was that it was a small enough time investment.
Yeah. Made it's sense a, to at least
yeah,
try.
Yeah, and it's exciting to see where we hope it can lead.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, so just to recap that a little bit, we were able to find two greens on the Cornell golf course, the fifth and seventh green, both of which had different growing habits in different environments, the fifth being in a very kind of low-lying, shaded environment, more poa than the seventh green, which is out in the open, one of his best-growing greens, best-performing greens. And in the middle of those two greens, he had a pump house. So what we did is we kept the recording information, the bucket, and the data collection sheet indoors so they don't get rained on. After he'd finished mowing the fifth greens, the operator, he'd go to the pump house, record the clipping volumes, go over to seven, which is about 100 feet from the pump house again, mow, come back, and collect those clippings. So that's how it kind of worked logistically, but what did we actually find from this information? Well, the very first day, we found something pretty striking that we wouldn't have previously known. So let's hear from Dave about that. That very first day when Jim is unloading the buckets and we're looking at the numbers, do you remember what we saw the very first green that we measured?
I think the very first green, what we saw is we talked about different people do it different ways when they're using a triplex mower, and some of them just collect everything because that's all you're really interested in.
Yep.
But either you or I don't remember who said it, but we said, let's collect each bucket.
Each bucket.
In doing that, we had an extremely old triplex mower, which happily we were able to purchase some new ones during the year. But what we found is that despite bench heights that would seem to be dead on, we were getting very different amounts of grass in the buckets. Yeah. And I don't think the naked eye in a lot of these cases could tell.
Yeah, if we were looking in the buckets and it didn't appear striking that the left bucket had...
Or on the green, though.
Or on the green,
wasn't a streaking situation where you could say, oh, well, we got to fix this left reel or this right reel. That was a big thing.
Okay, so right off the bat, what we saw is clipping volume allowed us to diagnose a mower setup issue that We wouldn't have noticed otherwise, just by visually monitoring either the amount of grass in the buckets or by looking at the green. We didn't see any streaking. So it was kind of interesting that the very first time we did it, we found some value there. But let's go ahead and circle back to those reservations Dave had earlier and kind of address those systematically now. Bill Kreuzer at Nebraska tweeted a poll the other day asking why people don't measure clipping volume, and he got over 500 respondents, and over 200 of those, 40%, said their biggest issue and their biggest hurdle to starting to measure clipping volume is that it's too much time, effort, and data. Now, we've already addressed that kind of time and effort part, and Dave was able to find a system that is kind of minimum effort, minimum time, but still gives you the value from clipping volume. So let's just focus on the data portion and how easy it is to monitor that data, and is it too much to look at?
No, probably this year, hopefully we get it tweaked down to just being, there's the data. But this year was a lot of, and I enjoy that, so it was a lot of me trying to figure out, well, how do I adjust for this, and how do I make the weather automatically load in there, and,
right,
different little things that, but as far as actually looking at the data and entering it, very minimal.
Very minimal.
Very minimal.
And you know, being completely transparent here, you're very into kind of the spreadsheet-oriented looking at data. So for you, it's going to be very easy. But, you know, if you think about some of your other friends, other superintendents who aren't kind of geared towards that tech thing, would you say it's still pretty easy for them to look at?
I feel like it would be. I think the key would be getting it set up. I think the format that you've got, if someone just wanted to enter and didn't want to play around and look at different possibilities of numbers, I think it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and you know, even Bill Kreuzer has his Greenkeeper app, which you can actually, that's all set up to track clipping growth.
Yeah.
So if you didn't want to make your own spreadsheet, you know, Bill's got that available. So just to expand a bit on how we kept the data this year, while growth rate was the primary metric we tracked, we additionally monitored environmental conditions like temperature, precipitation, humidity, and compared those with growth rate to look for correlations. We also kept track of models like growth potential and the Smith-Kearns dollar spot model, which require a bit more effort, but are still meaningful to calculate and monitor. And of course, all of this was housed in a Google Doc for easy access. So if all of this sounds like too much, there are services, like we mentioned, the Greenkeeper app, that have a better user interface and collect all of this information for you automatically. But getting back to clipping volume, we looked at it using a 5-day rolling average. So growth inherently varies day to day, and so by using that 5-day rolling average, we were able to quote-unquote smooth the data to look more for trends. However, Dave still does have these concerns about the day-to-day variations. So let's look at the other concerns. One of the big concerns in that Twitter poll was it's unreliable and inconsistent. So we got a tweet here from Luke Bennett, and he says, clipping volume measurements are simply unreliable, inconsistent measurements that are unrepeatable from day to day. Too many variables, hashtag more art than science. Again, I think we talked about this a little bit. Would you agree that they are inconsistent day to day?
Okay, so I would have had the same, that would have probably been my number one, or very close to my number one concern. And at this point, I would say, personally, do I know whether they're, you know, reliable or not the way we're doing? I don't know. I do know Bill and Micah, and I know they're pretty sharp guys. And so I have confidence that what we're doing is taking us in a good direction, you know. So I think my understanding of it is that if you wanted to be even more accurate, you'd have to dry the clippings out. And, you know, but obviously that's not a practical day-to-day solution. And I think the work that these other guys have done, I trust that it's, you know, that it's useful information. And it appears to me, it's not like I got information that I wound up saying, wow, that is way off because we were wet that day. And again, because we're smoothing the data out, you know.
You can still kind of see the overall trend from that.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right. So, again, we're addressing these concerns one by one. The last one, and maybe the most important one, is this data useful to you? So, For you, what was the big value you got out of measuring clippings from a management perspective?
So the big value that I got, and I'm not sure that I've got it yet, but it is starting to give me information that I hope to use to try to smooth out that growth pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And I've dialed it in enough to where I think I know how much I want the greens to grow.
Yep.
So now the next trick is seeing what types of things I can do to get us closer there more often. And our number one, by far biggest thing this year, very wet year,
mm-hmm.
just big, huge torrential rains. And we had extended periods where we were baling hay off the greens.
Yeah.
So, but which you would know anyway, but being able to put the numbers on it
mm-hmm.
and being able to look at it more analytically, if we, not that you can totally eliminate the idea that you're going to
mm-hmm.
get a lot of grass mm-hmm. after a rain,
yeah.
you know, by tracking things, trying different things, you know, lowering fertility at certain times, mm-hmm. growth regulators,
yep.
sometimes it's just increased mowing.
You're basically now you're saying, okay, I know, I have a good sense of when my greens are really good. You hosted the high school state championship. You host a college golf tournament here for the Cornell golf team. You know kind of the number you're going to get clipping volume wise when you have those really nice, yeah. firm, fast greens. And what we also know now is when we get those large amounts of growth, when, you know, we just get hammered with rain, that is like five times more yeah. growth. And
it greatly affects, you know, green speeds and, yeah. and, you know.
And so now what you're able to do is, if you do make those changes, whether it's fertility or growth regulators or just your cultural practices, you can evaluate how did my clipping volume respond after I did that. So, you know, I think this gets to kind of this idea of controlling growth, and that's kind of the holy grail with this thing, right? When Micah and Bill are kind of looking at these, they have certain number, target numbers, for example, 10 milliliters per meter squared, I think is what Micah
yeah.
has found at certain golf courses is a really good range
like that
produces
that.
Great
yeah.
greens. And we found basically the same thing here. Once you get mm-hmm. to that number, we're really good. How can we control the growth to get to that number? And, you know, so, you know, look again on Twitter, some of the comments from Dr. Horvath down at Tennessee. Even though your practices can try to hit a range, Mother Nature can also have some or a lot of say in the outcome. Same is true here. I think this year, you know, with those rain events, would you feel like there's anything you could have done to stop the growth from that?
I think first you have to identify a problem mm-hmm. and then start to look for how would we solve that. We have some different things at our disposal. You know, bottom line is my guess would be that we wouldn't be able to eliminate it,
oh, yeah.
but maybe, you know, it would be much more palatable if, you know, we were getting 20 or 25,
yeah.
what are they, milliliters?
Milliliters per meter squared.
Milliliter per meter squared, you know, as opposed
yeah.
to 50.
Yeah.
Because we don't need to, we're not farmers. We don't need to grow
yeah.
all that grass
that's
and
right.
then throw it off in, you know,
mm-hmm.
so.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, that's a good way to kind of put a bow on, can we control growth? Now we're trying to figure out if we can. And we don't know if we have, you know, 40% control, 50% control, or if it's like 20% control. I mean, and we don't really have a good sense of that, but we're starting to build that with at least measuring the clipping volume and trying to see how our practices change that. So the bottom line from Dave here is that some of these criticisms of measuring clipping volume do have some merit, right? There is a lot of variability day to day. And ideally, you'd like to control growth, but it appears that's not as easy as it seems. Of course, then there are also the concerns that he thinks don't have that much merit, right? The time and the effort portion. We were able to overcome that obstacle relatively quickly. So he's still getting value. Even with these criticisms, he thinks it's still worth doing, and we talked a little bit about his plan for next year to measure clipping volume. So let's talk about next year and kind of where you're thinking about going with this. How are you going to expand it? Are you going to make any changes in it, you think?
The big thing is adding the putting green. We talked about that a few times this year.
Mm-hmm.
You got a bucket over there, and we never quite
yep.
did it. But that's typically the first green that we mow, and I really think that's going to be important in helping make decisions, because it may help us make a decision not to mow that day or to double cut that day, not a decision about what to do the next day.
Right, right.
But to affect that day. And also, if there happen to be cutting issues where we notice differences in the buckets that are, you know, that we feel like we need to respond to, we notice it right there, first green. Let's figure it out. So
that'll give you more actionable. Because right now, currently the fifth and seventh green, those get cut, you know, I don't know in what order they are, but they get cut later, so you've already cut a bunch of greens before you measure them there. So so that's the plan next year, is just kind of add the putting green. And again, you're not gonna measure every single green, but for what you're looking to get out of it, you don't necessarily need to do that. Some people may want to measure every single green, and I know,
I think the other thing would be, if I really thought time was the big issue, in hindsight, if I was gonna dial back or not, I think I would just do the putting green and then try to calculate greens I know are weaker as to what I think they would be. But like I said, the two or three greens, I don't think is a, not really a significant amount of time.
So before Dave and I ended our clipping volume conversation, I had one more philosophical question on the role data collection has in the turf industry. And there appears to be a general sentiment from some people in the industry that data is replacing the skill and knowledge needed to grow grass. So I asked Dave about it. One other comment I wanted to address, before we wrap up, is from David Marquardt at Dirt and Turf. Hopefully I pronounced your name right. I probably didn't. But he says, look, clipping volume, TDRs, chlorophyll meters, compaction, firmness meters, soil, water, tissue analysis are all tools. None within themselves is sufficient. We've lost the art of observation and understanding cause and effect. So says the old fart in the room. So Dave, I'm not going to call you an old fart in the room, but this guy makes a good point, right? We have all these things, these tools at our disposal, but he says we've lost the art of observation and understanding. I think what we've noticed with you, and I hope you can elaborate on this, is clipping volume is not solely gonna change your entire management program. You have all these other tools as a superintendent. Your knowledge, the art of being a superintendent is still there. You just have these other things to draw on when you want some more feedback. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It to me, having more tools allows you to observe more. You can observe some, you know, obviously there's no replacing observation with the naked eye. I always tell, I built a golf green for someone in New Orleans one time, and I told them the number one thing you need if you're taking care of a golf green is you need to be observant. And same thing for superintendents, and when I would train assistant superintendents, is you have to be able to notice that there's a problem. You don't even have to know what it is. Mm-hmm. There's people like Frank Rossi and Micah Woods and Bill Kreiser that can help you figure those answers out, but you have to be observant. Mm-hmm. So these tools are just things you can help diagnose other possible answers. And yeah, sometimes we overanalyze things a little bit, but it's, you know, golf has become a big business, and so we're all trying to produce the best possible product, and to me, more information is good, and it helps you be a better scientist, but also a better artist.
So there you go, an in-depth conversation on clipping volume with the superintendent of the Robert Trent Jones Golf Course at Cornell University, Dave Hicks. Of course, thanks to Dave for taking the time to sit down and chat with us. We hope it's been informative to all those who listened. Please feel free to give us feedback on Twitter or Facebook at Cornell Turf, and leave a review if you listened on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. We'll see you later on the Cornell Turf Grass Clippings Podcast.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.